Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 nonprofit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
We acknowledge that the Revital Health Podcast is recorded on the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people of the Noongar Nation, Borloo. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture and pay our respects to Noongar elders past and present. Welcome back. Today's conversation is one I've wanted to have for a very long time, and I can honestly say it's one of the most important topics we rarely speak about. We talk endlessly about health, vitality, longevity, but almost never about the one thing every single one of us is guaranteed to experience: death. And more importantly, how we care for it. Today I'm joined by the incredible Kara Walker, an eco-fairy turned independent funeral director and death doula, who is completely redefining what death care can look like here in Australia. From supporting families through grief to bringing dignity, ritual and humanity back into the process of dying, Kara is challenging a system that has become disconnected, clinical and in many ways traumatizing. In this episode, we explore why modern culture has become so disconnected from death, what we've lost by removing ritual, touch, and community from the grieving process, how death can be supported with the same intention, beauty, and preparation as birth, the role of death doulas and what conscious end-of-life care actually looks like, how to have conversations with loved ones before it's too late, and why learning to face death may be one of the most powerful ways to heal how we live. This is a deeply emotional, thought-provoking, and honestly transformative conversation. And I truly believe it's one that has the power to change how you view life itself. Let's dive in.
My goodness, I am so excited to have you on the podcast after all these years. Kara Walker, welcome.
Jodi, so good to be here.
This topic is something very different for everyone, and I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a very long time, and have admired you through all your different careers. And I am so in awe of what you've created now. From the biggest girl fan of eco fairies to now into the Walker family funerals, and how you are approaching this very taboo subject and creating a very different perspective for people, which is much, much, much needed in our culture. So, bit of intros, I think. Who are you and how did you land in funerals?
Well, thanks for having me. And it's great to talk to you. I know that you are all about vitality and longevity. So It's a great topic to come in because we don't talk about death care and appropriate end of life support because we're so busy caught up in life. But it's something we're all going to face, whether it's for a loved one or ourselves. So I really value that you've brought this into the show. I think it's an important part of embracing all of life. And like I think it's healthy to talk about this. So yeah, I'm an eco-fairy, been in a fairy for Perth for over 30 years. And I became a celebrant. That's what got me into the death industry. I actually became a celebrant because I wanted to marry all my gay friends over 12 years ago when we were fighting in the courts. I thought, oh, I just want to get this over and I can't wait. And then the courts let us down and I had this celebrant, certificate registration. And I thought, being a fairy and a celebrant, someone's going to ask me to do a child's funeral one day. And unfortunately, that happened. It was a friend of mine. She passed with her son in a car crash. And she was the most wildest woman, and the thought of her being at a cemetery with some old dude talking about her, it just couldn't happen. We had to do it our way as a community, everything alternative. And it felt like every step was a fight. And, it shouldn't be like that. Everyone should be able to do it how they want in their own way. Now, in Perth, when a little one passed, I got a phone call and I would be their celebrant. And as a celebrant, you would stand with the heart of the family and you find that story and their legacy and you represent them. And at the same time, I was at the mercy of these funeral directors. And for anyone who's organised a funeral knows that there are time restrictions, there are, what you want to do, they're with their own guidelines and limitations, and the prices are astronomical. And I know that some people can afford it, but for families who are single income, they've lost a baby, I was just watching them getting taken advantage of, and I couldn't handle it. So I went off to get my own license. So I worked with an independent company in Perth, and they were wonderful to train me up. And to be honest, when I applied for my license, you get your license through Metropolitan Cemetery Board in Perth. They rejected it. I followed their rules and they rejected it, and I actually had to take them to court and fight them. I fought the state government for 9 months for me to be licensed. So, but here
What?
I am in, yeah. So September 2024, I'm officially an independent funeral director in Perth. For all of that. So, yeah.
Wow. See, I told you before the show that I'd find out something that I did not know. There you go. No, that's ridiculous and incredible at the same time. Oh my
They
goodness.
broke rules. I followed the rules. They said no. I said, we can't. So it was as simple as that. So I just had to jump through the hoops, continually jump whatever, barricades they were trying to put up. But I knew I was meant to do this. I had such a drive and a passion for it. I really believe in bringing death care back into the nurturing arms of people who actually care and have integrity and dignity in mind. And that's been my drive. I think, I've been talking about this constantly around Perth, and it's not to promote my company, it's how to talk to funeral
People.
directors to get what you want. And that's what I always hope to get from these conversations, is to empower people to advocate. You can ask for so much more.
It's one thing that I've seen a huge gap. I've not yet seen a podcast or anyone talking about how to look after your death.
I know it's a weird system where we think, when we get to it, you're under duress of grief and maybe trauma, and then you have to arrange a service for your loved one. And who wants to shop around? Who knows what's right or wrong? You don't know. So at this point, when we aren't feeling that strain, is the time to talk about it and to know your options, to look around, and then when the time comes, you don't just pull on some name that you've heard in ads. They've got that high budget marketing, and you just go, oh, I'll use that funeral name because that's the one I remember. That's just what happens.
And it like one thing that's guaranteed in our lives for everyone is that we're going to die. We're not even guaranteed to have a wedding or a child or any of those things, but we're guaranteed to be born and to die. So again, this just blows me away how yet no one has actually spoken about that. So firstly, let's actually dive into that. What are the barriers around this? Because obviously it is uncomfortable to think about our own mortality and others who we love. It's the most scariest thing for everyone. And I even doing this podcast with you, I've got, I had emotional fear around it in because it's ingrained in us as a culture to fear death versus all these cultures that do this so well. And I think about it now, it gives me goosebumps when I was talking to you about one of your stories where you had a loved one in the house who had passed. And I was just like gobsmacked with you, going, what? Is that what? And this is what cultures used to do. And I started to look into it, and we research it, and we, view documentaries, and read about it, and how okay they are with that process, and how comfortable. Obviously, there is always going to be grief. It's not going to be not grief, but how they instill it into their culture to make it normalized. So therefore, they feel so comfortable. So let's explore this.
I think the normalized part of it is that it happens from childhood. Like you said, other cultures, it's normal for them. We're all going to be losing our grandparents, right? That's the first line. And children are involved in that process. They have them in their home. They're watching them being dressed. They're watching the women love them and nurture their bodies and wailing over them. They can touch them. They can see the changes. And for us, it became an industry. And a lot of it had to do with the wars, like the men were killed far off and they would use embalming solutions, and that kind of changed the whole industry. And we used to use the front parlor of our home to lay the, deceased loved one out. And then people didn't want that anymore. It became the funeral parlor. So they would go to this home, a funeral home, and the person would be laid out there instead. So it's been a steady removal to the point now when a normal funeral for us is to go to the cemetery. You sit 5 to 10 meters away from your loved one who's in a box. You said goodbye to them at hospital. You don't see them again, and there's no contact. And our deeper psyche has a sense that something is missing in our lives. And I feel the grief journey is so much more traumatized because our hands aren't touching, our eyes aren't seeing. To really embrace death and our loved one is very hard to do. But I truly believe if you can do that, if you're able to do it, and the person is in a state where it's okay to do that, then your grief journey will be a lot better for you. And everyone says that when they come into view, that it's horrible. They're crying. It is a deeply hard time. They take a deep breath and they always walk out and say, "I'm so glad I did that." And that's the difference. And it's up to us. We do them up so that they, look like they're resting peacefully, or we can work with the loved ones so that they can dress them and do that part as well. And it's, our mothers washed us and they dressed us and they took care of our body. To close that circle and be the last person that wash and dresses your parent, it is so hard to understand, but the beauty of that circle coming around is so, it's really profound.
You're gonna make me cry in this podcast. I know you were going to. I don't have my box of tissues close to me.
Well, it's, do you think of it? I used to think about my parents dying, and I would, it is
Of
ingrained.
course.
It's our deepest fear, right? That it is going to happen. So, what can we have this conversation with our parents? And it can be as simple, your parent doesn't have to write it out and prepaid it. It could be as simple as, do you want to be cremated or buried, first of all? Those simple things. And conversation of, oh, do you know that dress that I wore to your wedding? Can you make sure that that's the dress that I'm wearing? I love that dress so much. Or, please don't put a bra on me. I want to be in my pajamas. I don't want any shoes on. If I have a bra, I'll sit up and slap you. Or, I dance with your dad at the wedding to this song. Please play this one as my last song. Just those constant conversations. When you're sitting arranging a funeral, you remember those little things, and it's so nice for you to put together a celebration of their life with the things that they wanted. And that's where
Absolutely.
I think talking about death is an act of love. It's not war. It really is an act of love.
And I think a natural curiosity for with children. So obviously I track back we both do, and all humans do, the curiosity around, okay, so like why? Obviously, like social. But then kids have this innate curiosity around death. And I've noticed it with both of mine. And they will, at a certain age, they start to, well, they fear it, obviously, because they don't want anyone they love. And they know that there's a separation now between them and the parents. And then there's this curiosity around death. Huh, okay, so what happens when we die? And all the questions start coming out at certain ages. So that really is the time to nurture this and to build upon it without fear and without morbidity, and to sort of like, oh, stop talking about that. That's yucky. And be able to create that safety around it. And yeah, I think the talking and the open conversations is just as even more important, which, yeah, again, I'm just so blown away about this topic, and this is why I'm so proud of you for doing this, because I think it's just so needed for our society to heal. And
It
we are all so broken, and from anything from miscarriages, which I deal with a lot in my clinic, and the grief around that, and then obviously further on, all throughout the life stages, you see this brokenness in not knowing how to deal with guilt, not knowing how to deal with grieving and what process that looks like. Like, I'm constantly having to explain to clients what grieving actually looks like and what's normal, because they feel like they're broken.
Yeah, it
So,
is.
yeah.
So I think from the beginning stages, like you're talking about children, this is where it starts. And it's up to us parents. We teach them, how much screen time we have, but how to have. We teach them, to do homework, to brush their teeth right. Can we also show them what to do when death happens? And this is a why is that not an essential part of childhood? And to be honest, this is the gift of pets. Pets are such a loving part of the family, and a chapter of your life is their whole lifetime. And when they die, it is the opportune time to show them what death can look like. And we cry over them. We hold ritual for them. We put them in a box. We put our letters and our crystals, or we bury them in the backyard and we lay them to rest. And we might want to put a memorial on top. And what you're doing there is really seeing them through that grief journey, talking about their memory and what they brought us and their legacy, where they might have gone from now. And then when this happens, say when the grandparent finally passes away, it's a smaller version of what they're about to expect again. They do a bigger version of that. So I know that sounds really intense to say that, but pets really do offer that to for parents to do. And again, some people are so scared of their children crying and being sad, but children have a right to grieve. So it's okay for your child to, it's all normal for them to cry over loss. And it's your fear of their grief is going to stop them from being able to grieve completely in later years. So lean into it, talk about it, open it up, and demonstrate so when the time comes, they can embrace it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to now go through maybe more information about what this looks like from what you help people with. And so, as you were talking about what it looks like to have a pet die, the process of that, and also the grief, and is there counseling that you also support people with, or the process of actually what to prepare for? Is there, what does that all look like? Or what is the ideal death ritual?
It's an interesting topic. So I think that death is becoming more embraced now, to be honest. Even from a government level, we have not enough beds in palliative care. So they have just put out a grant from January this year. Each person who wants to die at home has $25,000 allocated to them. So you can be at home with support, with nurses, people doing shopping, housework. Even if you don't have family around you, you can have a team supplied to your home so you can die at home with support, which is So as a so I'm a funeral director, a celebrant, and a death doula. So I really believe in continuity of death care. And that means talking about death in the end of life stages for the family and the loved one, and talking about it before we get to that bitter end, to that part where it's hard. Talking about what's normal, what you're going to see, what you're going to hear, what you're going to smell, what death actually looks like, and what's normal. So when we're getting there, I say, do you remember when I said this sound and how they're breathing? This is going to happen. Then they're going, oh, yeah, okay. Because we've had that conversation before, then you're not freaking out, thinking, oh my God, what is this? What's going on? You're getting into it and understanding our shutdown process in death. Our bodies know how to heal and they know how to die. And this is what people don't realize. There is a natural shutdown process that happens. And as a nurturer and as a healer, we want to feed and nourish and support. And we have to stop doing the things we intuitively do when we're supporting someone who dies. We can no longer give them water and food in those last stages. Their body, their digestive system isn't working. So they're shutting down and you're watching your loved one. Everything you want to do is naturally to feed them, but that might actually make them choke. So it's such a small thing, but as a mother and a nurturer, it's a strange thing for people to shut off, but you are watching them, and to love them is to stop doing that. Instead, to wipe their lips with, wet towels, and to continually read to them, and to rub their feet, and put oils in the room, and tell them they're loved, and tell them they've done a good job, and support their spirit to let go. Yeah, the intricacies of that, you can be medically supported, but to watch that and observe that, I think understanding that process will give you the power to be okay with that process as it happens.
It just reminds me of the preparation of birth that we have as mothers. It's exactly that. And why have we completely forgotten about this last part of life? It should be that beautiful. Like you say, I just love that we know, as I tell my mums, your body is born to birth. We are born to die. So why wouldn't our body know how to do that?
And that's exactly what it's doing. Yeah, that process. I think that's why there is an army of death doulas coming into the industry. These women are suddenly going, oh, wait, I'm a little bit older than the birthing age now. And all these women are going, I still want to nurture. And this is where I can support you. It's another transition. But, you're right. We know how to do it. And the same as birth, though, what I want to make sure people know is that there's no such thing as a good death. Like I feel, that pressure on a woman to have a good birth. And she has all of these ideas of I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it naturally, and I'm just going to be embraced. And then when push comes to shove, everything goes different and it is very difficult. And then you're not sticking to your plan, and then it's really hard. You can have an idea of what you'll want your death to look like, and then you have to accept that the body's going to do different things, and birth and death, it can look, it can look intense, it can look messy, it can sound loud, it can sound gurgly. It's the same as birth. What you expect and what you see and what you feel are very different. So don't set you up for an expectation where then you're trying to cling to that expectation.
Good point. And I think anything in life, we still don't know. We're so unknown and up to the mercy of the universe and the beauty of what is to be taught and offered to us, in that we just have to always have that surrendering, which is so hard.
But the one time that we can curate things to a T, and this is the gift that the laws have passed, is voluntary assisted dying. And I, as a death doula, I get to sit with people during this transition stage, and it is such a beautiful moment, So, for example, a beautiful lady, we just wrote a story actually. Her name is Vianney. There's a story about her in Supernal magazine Australia at the moment. The lady who wrote it, Freya Mumsey's Ascension. So she was surviving cancer for a long time, and she suddenly said, no, I'm going to die this week. And they asked me to come and see her in hospital, and we planned her death and her funeral on the same day. Sat on her hospital bed with her daughter, and that end of that week, we had her transferred back to her house, and her daughter set up this bed like a cloud under her tree in the garden. 30 of her best friends and family members sitting around. There was a pond. There was a screen. People who couldn't make it were watching. She had incense. She chose what she wanted to wear. She chose the music. Every person had a little crystal and came up and whispered to her the last stories that they wanted to tell her. Then, when she was ready, she looked the doctor in the eye, gave the nod, and the doctor came forward while her daughter sat by her side holding her hand, singing Hallelujah. And she took her breath with the raven above and the bee flying above her, and she was gone. It was the most beautiful curated passing. And I was a sobbing mess. Just
That was my next question. Like, are you at least emotional around these times?
holding my space. But the fact was so beautiful, because I see so much tragedy, to be honest. I've seen it all. You cannot imagine the tragedy that I've seen. And then to see something done so beautifully, and I remember the VAD nurse was looking at me going, what
Why are you crying?
Literally, it was
We're
divine.
human. We all cry.
Divine. But the reason I was there, the death doula, to support her, this lady, this beautiful woman, wanted to make sure she was dignified in her passing. We're still a woman. Like, she wanted her lippy looking good and make sure that she didn't let go and look terrible in front of her friends. And that was my job, to sit there with her and to hold her dignity. And she did. She looked gorgeous. And
Oh,
she took her
goodness.
clothes and wrapped up, and she was stunning. Even in her passing, she stayed in
Wow.
the garden while everyone sat with her till it was time for us to take her. So
Oh my goodness. That is just stunning.
yeah.
Blowing my mind, Cara, blowing my mind. Okay. So, yeah, I guess my next question is around that. Yeah, how for you personally, and I want to dive more into the process in a minute, but how do you personally any job's hard, you go home thinking about it. How do you see all this messiness and beauty, and then land at home, and then family, and how do you do that?
It's surreal. I'm going to say that. So that day, I wrapped that up, brought Vianney into my care, and then I went and picked my kids up from school. So code switching into mum, and I think it makes you hold your kids closer. Death is a very open conversation in my home, so I tell my kids I saw this and experienced this today, and my boys talk about it openly with me, and oh wow, that would have been really hard, and that would have been intense. So for me, I treat it as an open conversation because I really want to normalize death for them, obviously because it's part of my everyday life. Some cases have been hard when I've worked with children and babies that are very little. And my coping mechanism, personally, my tools, my own kids coming home and spending time with them. And I am a crazy chicken lady. I go and I sit in my chicken pen.
You've always been a crazy chicken lady.
My tool, I just sit in there and I love my chickens. I just watch them and I'm grounded and they're just around me and their sounds and they watch. But I know it sounds so silly, but that's my tool. It just brings me back into real life and a place of joy. And I feel it's like a drain down into earth, and then I'm good to go again. The difference, though, even though I see continual grief, it's not my own grief.
Yeah,
I think
you
that's
can
what I
separate that.
exactly. It's the injustices get me sometimes when I witness some parts of society which I feel are unfair, but the grief I can sit and I can be compassionate and I can cry it through, but I don't carry it on each day to day because it's not mine. I'm just there to support them in theirs.
Goodness me. And you've obviously experienced your fair share of grief and to have loss and to know all of that yourself. But it is, again, it's another role that you the healer, as you said, the carer you are. We can separate ourselves if need be to be the best that we can be in those roles. And so but because it's so taboo, a lot of people, I would imagine, would be like, gosh, how do you go home every day after you've just seen someone die?
We do. And all of our staff, I work with a team of women. I don't mean to, it just seems to be women are the ones who are more aligned to my company's vision at the moment. And we have a rule that there's a red button. If anyone feels it's too much, you can always click that red button. You can walk away. We're here. And we also have a very open discussion that at one point our closest family and friends are going to be brought here. Would we be okay with that? And this is what we're always talking about. And we've decided because of our level of integrity, we would rather them come into our care than go with someone else. So we would rather care for our loved ones than and face that than anything else, or allow our team to care for them if I personally can't do it. So those intricacies are is what we talk about as the death carers.
And important again, like you say, because it is an inevitable thing to happen at one point in everyone's life.
For sure.
So the process on that a little bit more, and maybe obviously it's beautiful, and birth death doula is something that I came across a few years ago, actually, just in a movie, I think it was, and then recently in The Pitt, which is a TV show, and they had a story within that, and there was a death doula there as well. I just think it's the most beautiful idea ever, and I wish there was many more that everyone knew about this, which is, I hope, in my hope, to share this information with everyone and empower. The purpose I do this podcast is to share these amazing pieces of information for empowerment. But when we're looking at the process of grief, we can't shortcut that. So Yeah, what and how do you help people through in terms of the grieving process? Because again, we are not taught this. We are not taught this at school. We are not taught this generally in our young, adulthood or childhood.
For sure. So when people come to me, obviously things have just happened and they're very raw. And their way of thinking and behaving is very different to other people. And if you've experienced grief, it is a surreal state of mind. You become very functional in things that need to happen. You are forgetful with things that don't matter. You cannot believe that the world is still going when there is something so big that's just happened to you. And it is a very strange place to be in, and you have to organize a big service, whatever that could be, is simple, but it's still a big process for you in that state, and you have to do a legal pathway to get to that point as well. So my stage when I'm with them is to step them through step by step. So I did a grief counseling course, just not to be grief counselor, but to know how to talk to people in this state. It's not usual, and you you're meeting anger and completely bottomed out, or sitting with people who maybe don't even speak English and they've got a grandchild translating for them. And my way to handle it is to give very small tasks, and to it's almost like working with a child. You give small lists of instructions verbally, I write them down as well, I follow them up, I have a lot of softness in how I talk. And for me, as a funeral director, I give a lot of time. Other funeral companies have 1 hour and 15 minutes maximum that they can spend with the family. And sometimes a meeting can take 3, 4 hours because they're suddenly sitting with someone and all of the stories come out. So giving them that time and space for me to get the information I need to do my job sometimes comes with hearing all of that as well. So it's like flowing with the river. Like, I know the points that I need to get to, and I just have to work through them. In terms of supporting them beyond that, when you have a lot of families with a child, there are some great organizations around. The one in Perth that I've just connected with is Lionheart. I don't know if you've heard
Oh,
of it.
yeah, I've heard of it.
So it's a non-for-profit organization in Perth. So as soon as a little one has suffered with grief, I can refer them onto Lionheart, and a psychologist will contact them and ask the parent, are they ready to come in and support? So that psychologist will work with them for 6 months. That first person who gives them a call will work with them. And this is a free organization. 6 months, Lionheart actually organizes weekends on grief for families, called Lionheart Camp or something like that, but it's not a camp, it's in Perth. Children who've gone through grief get to hang out with other kids, and it's not like they're sitting around a weekend talking about death. They're playing games, and that's run by counselors, but they get to share together as a family. Kids and teens and parents are separated into their age appropriate and demographic, and they work through these workshops. But they can't go there until at least 6 months after the incident, because the first 6 months you're in that first stage that we're talking about, and you're not going to be thinking about that. Apart from a parent who's like, what am I going to do for my kid? We call in that help to get them that support so that you can work on yourself, and that counselor will get you to the point where the family can then go to Lionheart Kids. So, yeah, definitely recommend them as an organization. I've been really happy with them so far, and what they do and how they support people. Unfortunately, the grief centre in Perth has shut down now, but I just talked to people about going to your doctor and getting your mental health care plan, so you can go to the counsellor to get your 10 sessions, and always asking, do you have support right now? A lot of these people are at home. I've met women who their husband paid all the bills, they drove for them, they don't even have a car licence, and these women have nothing, and their kids are off, and they're of that generation where they don't have support. It's not my job to do that, but no one's got to step in. So getting them the phone numbers and the support they need, and it would be in home care at that point because they've got
I
nothing.
can't get around.
Yeah, it's really hard. So that's just conversations which I weave in with what I witness and what I see. And the difference with my home as well, even though I've got a funeral home, I go to people's homes to meet them, because when you've just experienced death, the last thing you want to do is brush your teeth, put on pants, and go to a funeral parlor, So I go to their home and meet them with all the paperwork, and I don't care what they look like and what the house looks like. it's so much easier for them to receive someone in their home. They apologize for the stacks of dishes, and it's the home saving every time. But
Yeah.
those little things to me make a big difference. So yeah.
Huge. They're more comfortable and it's, they're in a non, it's also safer. When you're in that primary stage of grief, you're not, like you say, paying attention to anything. It's really not even safe to drive because you're in such a cloud of fuzziness, Yeah. It's just so good to be able to talk to this. And I think it's the contact I feel with obviously, whatever they feel, but we never really see people once they've passed. And like you say, the touching and the looking and the saying goodbye, it's so separated. Like everything else I feel is going in this society. Like we have these, warriors that are really fighting for us to come back into community and all of that. So it's happening, but it feels like the world is trying to pull us apart further and further from the things that have happened over the years, including COVID. It's like separate and stay distance and don't be near people. And so we don't actually get any of that, closeness anymore. So even that, I think, is quite taboo for people to be like, well, you go in and you touch them or you actually see them in the room. Yeah.
It's death is the last taboo, and death, I think in people's mind think it's going to be ugly and it's going to be dirty and toxic, maybe. In some cases that's true. Cases it's not. If I talk on a very basic human level, we as an organism are filled with this beautiful bacteria, that you support all the time. And when we become a dead organism, our bacteria does its job and starts to break us down. So as a death walker, we are working to try and slow that process down to give that person dignity. So in the hope that if the family wants to come in, they're holding their state in a peaceful state for as long as possible. And the bacteria works from the place where there's liquid first. So that's in our gut and in our stomach area, our blood, our heart. So, when someone dies at home, the first thing that you're going to want to be doing is cooling down this area as quickly as possible. When they're actively dying, we have the heater on, they're in a blanket. As soon as they have passed, this is the conversation you have to plan. The aircon comes on. We put the cooling areas onto them as well, and we can hold them home for so amount of time, depending on how long that you like. If you have them brought into our care, we would do things with them to, well, first of all, put them into the fridge, which is the mortuary accommodation. But we can do things to try and slow down that process as much as possible. I don't believe that everyone should be embalmed. Embalming is a treatment that is wonderful if it's needed, but it's not essential. A lot of companies just do it automatically. The reason it would be needed is, for example, the service can't be held for 4 to 6 weeks' time, or there is a lot of physical trauma on the body, so that bacteria has exploded faster, or it's a child and a baby because their structural integrity of their tissue isn't holding as well as an adult. So those reasons for embalming are 100% essential. Other people who've died peacefully at home and it's expected death, they haven't gone to the coroner for 3 weeks, we don't need to use embalming solution. We can wash and dress them with soapy water, and you can still hold their hand. They're not dirty, they're not covered in something, a disease you're going to catch. Most diseases can't live in that organism afterwards. So in that dead organism afterwards. So there's nothing to actually fear.
So many myths, isn't it? Where you
It
feel like you've been having all those perceptions of things that, where do we get them from? We don't know. These beliefs.
And honestly, when you see them, they will look different. We can't take that away, but that's the whole point. When you look at them, you will see that they're a vessel, and you will first of all notice that they're at peace, and that makes you go, okay, they've been in pain, they've been struggling, they've been holding on, and suddenly they look at peace, and that is a relief. And then deeper psyche is that they're gone. They're not there anymore. And you really see that. And that's where your mind can let them go. So that's the beauty and the gift of that moment. So.
Like you say, we have that missing piece, and that can create and elongate the grief process and confusion, which is not healing, at all. leading me into this and answer this however you wish. But the elephant in the room is what happens to us after we die, Kara? And what are your beliefs around this? Because everyone's going to have their own beliefs, and I know this, but you're there experiencing it and being with people through this process more than any of us. So you will have a deeper intuition and understanding around this.
So my belief on death is, I believe in a spirit and a body, and I think there is a separation of that that happens. And I feel that the spirit is around, but I feel the spirit is with love. So sometimes when they've just come in, I can feel them around. Whenever I open my door in the morning, I say, "Hello, everyone." I put music on, and every time I open the fridge, I say hello to them all. Like when I'm working on them, if I know their favorite music, I put their favorite music on. They're in the room, but I want to respect them, and I ask consent to them, honestly. And I say, "I'm about to do this. I'm going to wash you now. Your son's picked out this dress. Do you like this dress? I'm so sorry. Your daughter gave me this bra. I'm going to put it on. I'm going to put your makeup. You're going to look amazing." I talk the whole time like they're in
Oh
the room.
my gosh, you're making me cry.
So, do you know a good example of this? Actually, I picked up this beautiful lady at a nursing home in not far from here. When I walked into the room, she died on her birthday, which I loved. And I
Wow.
said, "Hello, I'm here to pick you up. Happy birthday." Oh, and her room was pink, and I was talking about the room. And then the nurses were at the back of the room looking wide-eyed at me like I was crazy. I've come in on my own with a stretcher to pick up this beautiful woman. And I said, "Oh, can you lower the bed for me?" It was one of those fancy control ones. And she looked at me, and then she looked at her, she goes, "Okay, missus, I'm going to lower the bed and talk to her as well." And I'm going, "Yes, I got it." So for me, where they've gone, I honestly believe we never know. I think that's the great mystery. And I don't think in this life we're supposed to know. I think we're supposed to live, but I want to have the deepest respect for their spirit as I do for their body. So that's why I talk to them and to love them like they're my family member. The joy of this job is that I get to see the expression of ceremony that all different cultures have. And this is highly spiritual. It is going to church. It is, laying them on the floor with a Hindu priest, putting herbs and chanting, and the whole family filling them with flowers and rice and the most beautiful, ceremony I could ever imagine. I get to witness all of that. And I don't know who is right or wrong, but I love to observe the human expression of love and grief and ceremony at that moment. So, but I like to think that I can, that they're around the love, and that's when they pop up for me. When I hold ceremony, when we're at the service, I feel a sense of them. For me, smell is a strong thing, like death has a smell to it, to be honest. And some people have a distinct smell.
Really?
So one gentleman I worked with had a distinct smell because he was repatriated from America to come here. And I was working with him, and I was the celebrant for this one as well. And at home, I'm like, "Oh, can you smell that?" It was so strong. And then it would go. And it was as I was thinking about him. And the day of the service, I walked in, I was like, "Wow, the whole cemetery smelt like him." And I was saying to the girls, "Can you smell that? There must be something going on underneath." They're like, "No, we can't smell it." And the moment he was committed down, it was gone, And to me, that was just like he was just around. It wasn't his body, it was around. It was just some kind of, connection. And it just reminded me, like, it was letting me know when I was thinking about it and when I was on the right path. And these are the little markers for me to remind me and to keep, doing what I do and, really making sure that I honor that person's body and spirit in every way possible, because I do think they're around.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't stay with me. Why would you
No,
be
no.
at a funeral home, when you've got loved ones who are honoring you and love you? I think the love is where the spirit goes, not the body,
Absolutely. And again, another, I think, myth and misconception is the ghost stories and the hauntings and things like that. Like, we need to actually have the human beauty and love applied to those. And like you say, it's that's where they want to be. They don't want to be anywhere else. And yeah, you hear about this sort of back to the smell. You hear about this often. People comment on this. Yeah, it's a different way of that communication.
Yeah, it is. It's a didn't really realize it until starting to work with this. And unfortunately, death has a very different, sometimes obnoxious smell to it. So that person smell following around, I had to get used to it. But now it's, you know, like anywhere you get used to it, right? So not
You
everywhere.
are absolutely incredible. Gosh, I just cannot believe your journey. I am just in awe. Like I said right at the start, I just absolutely love that you're doing this. And do you know what? I just feel so honored that people in the community around you, and hopefully this spreads across the world where these sorts of funeral, I don't know even how, I don't even want to call it a funeral home or a funeral parlor. It's like the rituals around death is explored in so many other countries and the Western countries that we need it the most because we don't have our own rituals where we really lock into and support each other. But yeah, it's those people who now have a completely different understanding and experience with what you can give them. And so that would be my next question is like, what's some of the feedback that you get? Because I'm sure you would have had people who have had the traditional, and then now your experience, what are the things that you hear, and how do you see people heal differently, maybe as well?
Yeah, so for us, it's about the feedback would be people wanting to embrace more unique them, you know. Going to a cemetery and holding that 1 hour standard cookie cut service sometimes feels safe for people, and that feels locked, and that's okay, you know, and that's an expected thing that we'll probably always do. But some people go, do you know what? We couldn't stand going to that place. We were part of the golf club. Can we go there? The answer is yes. You know, if you're an artist, let's put on all of the artwork and have an exhibition. If you're a surfer, let's go to the surf club. If you, I've had a guy in a coffin and all of the chairs were cleared, and the guys, the family were kicking a soccer ball, and every time it hit the coffin, they'd all go have a shot. They did that for an hour. That was it. Music playing, the bottle and the shots were on the coffin. That was their service. And then they all walked out, thank you. Off they went. And I was like, oh my God. But they loved it. That was perfect. That's exactly all they wanted. No talking, none of the fuss. So it can be that, you know, and
Any way you wish.
imagine if I said, no, we have to go to the cemetery and we have to do this. And I'm selling them the package of what we do. But they've come to us and said, we're going to do this. They go, yeah, you are. You know, so from my perspective, I've had great feedback from the families. I feel like I'm ruffling feathers in the industry because, you know, the fact I couldn't even get my license for so long, you know, I'm
Oh,
coming
yeah.
here.
Political.
As an independent, you know, doing things, you know, on my business plan that I wanted to do things different from the start. I've always been very clear about that. But that's okay. You know, I'm expanding from the middle. I'm not affecting them, and they can either get on board. But I'm sticking to the laws. I'm sticking to the rules. I know those. You know, sometimes I'm living on the edge, but that's okay. And I feel that the more we do this and the more people witness this, the more it's normalized. And people, you know, for example, Vianney's death, who I passed, all of those 30 people were so blown away of how death could be. And some of them were not spiritual and said, I didn't know what to expect, but they all left changed. So, you know, if we can invite them to these different spaces of honoring and celebrating death and grief, I think it will change.
Absolutely. So needed. And in any space of life, yeah, it's something that. Yeah, like I said before, like no one is looking after death. No one is looking after that. And now you are that and you are a disruptor and everyone has to come on board now because the demand's going to call for it. People are going to want this and honor this. Why would we want to make any part of our life, even death, scary and fearful and worse than it has to be? Why can't we make it all beautiful? And it's what life is, beautiful and love. It's what we want to live for. That's what we're hanging on to and why we're so fearful of our own deaths because we don't want to miss what's here.
Indeed. I mean, you know, I think as we bring children into it, I think the fear of you know, losing your parent, but also as a parent, the fear of your child losing you as you know, so hard to get your head around, really. And so supporting them in these moments is probably something that is the hardest thing you could possibly think and do. And again, these conversations, because who knows what could happen? These
That's the
conversations
thing.
of, you don't want to scare them, but talking about death in a normal sense. And also, like this morning, I walked with my son Taj to somewhere, and he mentioned something to me about death, and I said, "Oh, I'm going to haunt you so hard." I said, I go, "You're going to have birds coming at you. You're going to have feathers everywhere." And I said, "I'm just going to love you so much, and you're going to know it. And you're going to be swooped by birds because birds are my thing, And he's like, "I know." And I believe that. I really do, And that's a joke and a cuddle and a squeeze for my 9-year-old. And that's normal for me. But if something happens to me, I like to think that those words are somewhere in him, and when he watches the giant flocks of black carnivores coming, he'll go, "Hi, Mum," yeah, he won't feel as alone. So preparing our children is in these conversations. Yeah.
For sure. And it makes it less traumatic, because it's going to be traumatic. No wonder. Here you are making me cry again.
I heard
We have a record here. I've
like,
cried the most on this podcast than I ever have. But you can't fully that it's going to be a traumatic thing for them, but you can also soften it and support them and actually have them know that it's a natural part. And like you say, pets are just instrumental in this. It was for me when I was a kid. Like I didn't want to get a pet now as an adult because I remember how almost traumatic it was to see all these animals around me always, not always, but dying, and you don't want them. They're your best friends. So it's something that I think we innately learn in that way, but it doesn't make it easier, I don't think, when you have a human loved one that's so close to you. And nothing will make that easier
They
other than
can
the
handle.
situation.
They can. It's amazing what they can handle. I live on a property, and there was another family living here years ago, and Omar was dying, the other family's mum. We just included all of our grandparents as all the kids' grandparents. And we sat on her bed with the kids all the time during her end-of-life process, and we talked about what's going to look like, and we talked about her being cremated, to the point where Taj brought her a letter. I think he was 2.5 or 3 at that point. And she said, "Oh, is this me with my angel wings?" And he said, "No, that's you burning." I was like, "Oh God, I'm so sorry." And she but they saw everything, and they were okay with it, and I'm so glad they did. And when she passed, her grandkids had a big emotional release. That was okay. His parents completely embraced that. It's not Children can see death. They're stronger than we give them credit for. It's not going to haunt them like a ghost or anything like that. They can sit with it. I think including them personally helps that.
I also agree. I think they are more in tune with that part because we come further and further away from the earth and from the universe as we become adults. I think they recognize it still. They almost remember, I think. And that's I think why they are it's a little bit more of an ease for them or a shorter process. And for me, it makes sense at least. And same with the ability for them to see things in different ways. And we, bat it out of them. So like, no, you can't, think that you hear something or dream something or, that's just all make believe now, but it's not. And this is what I love about your work with the eco fairies is always embracing this child in everything that we do. And so we children are our greatest teachers. They always will be.
Absolutely. And as a parent who's grieving, your children will get you through it because we're so busy. Life goes on, and they remind us of that. It is a big cycle, and children remind us that we are grieving, but we're also raising the next generation, and they will help you move forward with that cycle. So, leaning into that mother part is it will help every step of the way. It will feel hard. It will break your heart. Some days you'll get up and just wish they would shut up, because you are feeling that, but you need to get up and feed the children and get them dressed. And the thought of that is so hard. But then once you get moving and your instinct to be a mother will be the thing that gets you through those difficult times. So, yeah.
Absolutely, make you stronger and wiser, and be able to give back harder
Yeah,
to those that really need it later on.
yeah.
And these are the greatest lessons of evolving and growing as humans, and as together doing that as well as a collective. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, just such a beautiful conversation. I would love, I just love talking to you in general. And I've never actually done a podcast with you on ecotherapies. That would also be really cool. I don't know, that's sort of like not prime for you. But yeah, those who are hardcore ecotherapy fans, I listen out.
I know things are hiding now, you know, they're still in the distance. I can't quite let it go because I love the magic part of it, but it's definitely hard to hold on to it being so engrossed in this world now. So
Absolutely. My kids now, 10 and 13, still think that you are a real fairy.
it's
And
like
I'm just like, Kara's just doing it. Like, she's just out of her fairy era right now. So she's had to hide her wings, and she is
so
she
funny.
is in a different path now. Now you are a death fairy.
Death there, yeah, death walker, that's what I call myself.
Death walker, yeah. Walker, there you go. Oh, well,
Well,
thank you so much for this and today and this beautiful conversation. And I really feel like this is going to be something we are going to be hearing about more. And thank you for doing this hard work in the beginning to create this beautiful service and support that you're giving everyone.
it's
Oh.
good. Thanks for opening up the conversation. And if people want to do more natural care, I don't know if you saw, but I've got a petition at WA Parliament at the moment. I'm trying to compost human bodies. So
Yeah, good.
so
Good.
last February in America, learning how to do more natural death care. We only allowed to do cremation, fire cremation, and burial in Western Australia at the moment. So I'm trying to get laws changed so we can actually be composted and actually return to ecosystems. So if anyone
Incredible.
wants to know more about that, please jump on. That's the petition is an official government one, but it's only live till May. So jump on there and
Okay.
let's change
Perfect. I
the
hear another eco fairy song come out of this.
laws. Can you? That's so good. When I die, I want to be compost. I
Yes,
love
please.
it. I'm going to find the catchphrase. I love it.
What a great way of teaching kids when you start to talk about decomposting bodies in an eco fairy song.
Poor Fairy Kirsty, you'll have to say, come on, bring your flute around. Guess what we're writing? Oh, she's already, poor thing, shaken up by making me be her funeral attendant a couple of times.
Oh my goodness. Oh, darling.
Yeah,
So where can people find you as well, Cara? So tell us the websites and all the
head
links.
on to the website, so walkerfamilyfunerals.com.au. So that's got all the information on me. It's got a natural composting link on there as well, which you can go and sign that petition if you are interested in more natural death care. I run free death care workshops every second Tuesday evening, every second month on a Tuesday evening. So if you're a death doula or want to be or palliative care, come along. Later in the month, I'm doing a dying at home workshop. Every workshop I do is free. I'm all about education. So look out for where I am out and about. But that's for if you're wanting to support a loved one at home or again, death doula, come along and I'll show you the ins and outs, hands-on information of what to do.
Very exciting. Oh, love it.
So,
But
yeah.
thank you again. It's just so lovely to chat with you. We don't see each other often, so these are the big excuses to actually just see you and chat to you and spend time with you. So thank you so much.
Right, darling. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and it is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.